with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week of Conversation Radio here on the Horn. Wonderful show getting us started last night with all Foxed Up, Don Fox, in fabulous downtown Woy Woy. I got to thinking about it. John's not the end of the week. John's the beginning of the week. So thanks for getting us started, John. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday night. All Foxed Up. Yeah, it's almost 2 minutes past the hour as we get started for this Monday program. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. I've got an idea of what the primary topic is this evening, and there are several others along the way as well. But I'm always interested to know what it is that's on your mind. On my mind, Mexico. As I began following the news of the flu outbreak and noting that it was said to have begun in Mexico, I was reminded of the single most prophetic statement about that country, the words of Porfirio Diaz. Pobre México, tan lejos de Dios y tan cerca de los Estados Unidos. Poor Mexico. So far from God, and so close to the United States. The timing of this could not be worse. This flu outbreak, if indeed it is an outbreak. There is information out there to suggest that we should at least be moderately skeptical. And you know how I feel about, you know, just outright paranoia. But I got an email over the weekend that made me stop and think. It came from our pal, Juanita. And Juanita reminded me of a little bit about swine flu. She said, "Hey, Bob, how about these apples? In 1976, I was working in a hospital that had us take the swine flu shot. Today, I have peripheral neuropathy. Coincidence? I think not. And along with Juanita's comments came an observation from Lori Price at CLG News. CLGnews.com. And it was a complete compendium of all not CLGnews.com, legitgov.org, legitgov.org. It was a compendium of all the flu news available at the time. This quote was pointed out by Lori Price at Citizens for Legitimate Government. Scientists said the virus combines genetic material from pigs, birds, and humans in a way researchers have not seen before. Well, some researchers. We are very, very concerned, World Health Organization spokesman Thomas Abraham said. We have what appears to be a novel virus, and it has spread from human to human. It's all hands on deck at the moment. The first swine flu outbreak took place at Fort Dix, New Jersey in 1976. Could very well, may very well have been a creation of the United States Army. 13 soldiers died in that outbreak. And that's, and I remember this. I remember it very well. I was all of 13 years old at the time. And everybody went a-running to get their swine flu vaccine. Because people who were alive in 1976, many of them remembered the Spanish flu outbreak of 1918. My reality would have been dramatically different but for the Spanish flu outbreak of 1918. The woman who would become my grandmother was engaged to a young man, engaged to be married to a young man, who was felled by the flu epidemic, pandemic of 1918. And she went on to instead marry the man who became my grandfather. But by the way, back in 1976, when they hustled that vaccine out that Juanita referred to, when they did put it out, it came with a caveat. You can't sue the manufacturer if something goes wrong with the vaccine. And shortly thereafter, people died, not from swine flu, but from the swine flu vaccine. As Lori Price notes in this particular article, she says every major media outlet has reported the fact that U.S. and U.K. bioterrorists have been manipulating the avian flu virus in university and army labs. Those would be institutional bioterrorists, the ones who get a paycheck every week, not a bunch of freaks living in caves in the far hinter regions of, say, Pakistan. No, these are bioterrorists who get up and kiss the wife every morning and muss the hair of their precious little children and get in the car and drive to work and mess around with mass death and then come home and say, oh my, do I smell meatloaf? They're those kind of bioterrorists. Meanwhile, the United States is denying an Indonesian allegation. This goes back to 2008, that it was producing biological weapons from bird flu samples sent by Indonesia to the World Health Organization. Oh, shoot, no, the Bush administration would never do nothing like that. That would just be crazy. But the fact remains that this flu virus seems to be an unholy marriage of human, avian, and swine-based flu strains. Now, how those flu strains get all married up without a little help, without a sort of viral yenta, I don't know. Just happened. It just happened. Because, you know, miracles happen all the time. Sun stands still in the sky. Virgin Mary appears on a hot cross bun. And bird flu, human flu, and swine flu just happens to come together in a particularly toxic mix. Pardon the clackety-clacking there. So poor Mexico. so close to God, so far from God, so close to the United States. Now I'm waiting for the first images of Lou Dobbs to come across the cable, with Lou Dobbs wearing a surgical mask and screaming that we should close the borders now. Ohio reported a case of this flu, but it was in a boy who had just gotten back from a spring break vacation with his family to Mexico. And I can't, you know, when something like this happens, I hate what the last 8 years did to me. I don't know about you. I don't know if it did it to you, too. But as a result of the last 8 years, starting on January the 20th, 2001, and going forward, it's been like being in the Carnival Funhouse in the mirrors, where nothing is quite as it seems, and it's hard to get a handle on exactly what reality is. Because as a result of the last 8 years, anything's possible. 9/11 went down, and it was a strange enough occurrence that thousands, if not millions, of people around the country are convinced to one degree or another that it was actually done by the Bush administration. And the Bush administration were so manifestly evil, that's the sad part. It was impossible for people to say, nah, because the Bush administration were so manifestly evil that imagining that they would be willing, even if incapable, willing to try it out, is far from the realm of impossibility. All you have to do is look at that giggling murderer and realize, he'd be capable of it. This was an administration that was capable of torture, of murder, of a war that has cost a million civilian lives, and starting it on nothing more than plain old-fashioned lying. So naturally, when this breaks out, I don't think it's unreasonable to wonder what kind of connection the Bush administration might have to it. We know because of his own bragging that Dick Cheney says he still has moles in the government who report to him. Who knows what those moles are up to? And you know, when you've got a new president coming out and saying, hey, look, the CIA guys who did the torture, we're not going to punish them. That'd be silly. Well, that's just a great big flashing red light to the CIA. Do whatever you want, boys. Just claim you were following orders. So who knows? Who knows how this broke out? But it is becoming a real threat in Mexico. Schools and churches shut down. Of course, if they kept the churches shut down, that'd be fine by me. The country might actually make a little bit more progress than it otherwise has. But it broke out, and I don't know if you know this or not. I didn't until I heard from our buddy David in South Carolina. It broke out in Mexico, in Perote, Mexico, in Veracruz state. Now, the natural thing to do would be to ask, well, what is it that is in Perote, Veracruz state that would facilitate the breakout of a particularly virulent strain of influenza? Or what might provide cover for the outbreak. Well, Perote, Mexico, de Veracruz, isn't my accent just terrible, is home to a company called Granjas Carol. Granjas Carol is a subsidiary of a little old American corporation called Smithfield Meats. Smithfield Meats, you'll recall, are the same bastards who run an operation, well, they run lots of operations, but they run an operation in Tar Heel, North Carolina, where they slaughter something like 32,000 hogs per day. That yummy pork loin roast, could be, very well likely is. Smithfield is pork. And Smithfield Meats in Tar Heel, North Carolina, was a particularly vicious place. They fought the simple act of attempting to organize on the part of the workers there for years and years and years, engaged in intimidation, engaged in violence. 32,000 hogs a day slaughtered at Smithfield Meats in just their Tar Heel, North Carolina plant. Well, do the math, but you get an idea of what kind of an outfit we're looking at when you consider Granjas Carol. I hope I'm saying that something close to correctly. Granjas Carol in Perote, Mexico, where they raise 950,000 hogs per year. Now, that's according to the company itself. And I don't want to get graphic around dinner time or make little Timmy and little Susie squeamish or anything. But can you imagine, just imagine the excreta, produced by 95% of a million hogs per year. Just try to get your mind. Because if you've ever lived near anybody who has swine, you know that they can get pretty ripe pretty quick, and you don't have to have a bunch of them either. It's not like horse or cow, which it has its own, but those are, you know, grass-based, not pigs. Pigs are closer to us on that scale. They'll eat anything, and you can tell it. This from April 6th, 3 weeks ago. Residents of Perote believed the outbreak had been caused by contamination from pig breeding farms located in the area. They believed that the farms, operated by Granjas Carol, polluted the atmosphere and local water bodies, which in turn led to the disease outbreak. The company denied responsibility, of course, as corporations always do. And simply said, it's the flu. It's the flu. There's a problem, though. I mean, a municipal health official down that way said his preliminary investigations had indicated that the disease vector was a type of fly that reproduces in pig waste and that the outbreak was, in fact, linked to the pig farms. Thus far, no one has identified, no health sciences expert has identified, again, this was on April 6th, a pathogen responsible for the outbreak. Now, I've read a bunch about this over the course of the weekend, and there is a whole lot of nothing about Granjas Carol in the for-profit media in the United States. But you have to remember, and the reason I mentioned Tar Heel, North Carolina, was that a union shop is likely to be a cleaner, somewhat less brutal, and more prone to follow regulations shop. Witness, for instance, Postville, Iowa, where an effort at a kosher meatpacking house, the largest in the nation, where an effort to keep a union out led to the literal trafficking in human flesh. Now, consider why it is that something like Granjas Carol would be in Mexico. Now, bear in mind, Mexican cuisine. Oh, this is a tough time to go food porn, isn't it? Mexican cuisine uses a lot of pork. But I can't imagine that Granjas Carol is exclusively a supplier to the Mexican market. Maybe they are, but I have not seen anything thus far to indicate that. So what we have is probably an export situation. And like so many American corporations who went south of the border, you have to go back and ask the question, why? Why did they do it? And like so many other American corporations, business was taken south of the border to avoid environmental regulations, and to avoid evade labor laws. Now, remember, the residents of the area around the pig farm, hog farm in Mexico say that an improperly maintained waste facility, they believe, and we understand the danger of the word believe, led to the problem. Also, in the reporting that David from South Carolina sent me, Mexican media are reporting the following: Granjas Carol, causa de epidemia en La Gloria. That's pretty easy to translate. Granjas Carol, cause of epidemic in La Gloria. La Gloria, by the way, is the village where the outbreak is said to have started. From that article in the Mexican press comes the following statement. By the way, all of this is coming from Grist. According to one community resident, the organic and fecal waste produced by Gran Jascarol isn't adequately treated, creating water and air pollution in the region. The author of the article says, I witnessed and smelled the same thing in Hardin County, Iowa, a couple of years ago, another area marked by intensive industrial hog production. The article goes on to say that area residents have long complained of fetid odors in the air and water and swarms of flies hovering around waste lagoons. Like their counterparts who live in CAFO-heavy U.S. areas, CAFO, they also complain of respiratory ailments. Now, with 30% of the area's residents infected with the virulent flu bug, 30%, people are demanding that state and federal authorities inspect hog operations there. So far, reports La Marcha, the response has been, and everybody knows this Spanish word, nada. Our nada, which art in nada, nada be thy name. Thy nada come, thy nada be done. Yeah, that was Hemingway. It's also being reported as far away as Mexico City. There are 40 confirmed cases, I do believe, at this juncture in the United States. A public health emergency has been declared. There are some simple things that you can do to try to protect yourself against the disease. Frequent hand washing is recommended, which I suppose means that people suffering from obsessive compulsive disorder will stand a greater likelihood of being uninfected. It's also recommended that you not lick the sneeze guard at the McFunster's Mega Food Trough All You Can Eat bar. That's a joke. And a very poor one at that. But in all seriousness, I expect that any day now, I expect to see Lou Dobbs appear on set with a surgical mask any day now. I expect to hear right-wingers screaming for closing the border. And at some point or another, someone, you know, maybe Glenn Beck or maybe Alex Jones, will declare that that this outbreak is a terrorist plot. Nah, it wouldn't be Alex Jones. He'll declare that the government did it. And in this particular instance, I can't necessarily agree with him or disagree with him. But no, some right-wing freak, you know, Red State or some such, will declare that this is a direct and proximate result of President Obama releasing the torture memos. Would you be surprised by something like that? I wouldn't. So just I've seen photographs of schools being wiped down and cleansed in New York City. Pay attention. Wash your hands. Cover your mouth when you sneeze, then wash your hands. Cover your mouth when you cough, then wash your hands. Wash your hands after touching someone else. Because, frankly, I find this kind of stuff, I'd be lying if I said that I didn't find it disturbing and frightening. Regardless of who did it. And I can't help but be reminded that the Mexico we know now was birthed in disease. That land, that beautiful land,
that prior to 1521, the locals referred to as Inkem Anahuac, the heart of the one world, that had a population that was greater than that of Europe's, whose central city, Tenochtitlan, where present-day Mexico City stands, was likened unto Venice, only clean, by the terrorist Hernando Cortes. That population was wiped out by disease-bearing priests and disease-bearing conquistadores and disease-bearing everything European. Wiped out down to practically nil. An entire culture erased by disease. Disease is brought not just by the humans, but by the animals as well. The diet of the pre-Columbian civilization, the brilliant civilization that existed in the Valley of Mexico, in Kemanahuac, did not include pork. It did not include sheep. It did not include beef. The primary meat sources for that people prior to 1519 or so, duck, turkey, fish, rabbit, deer, bugs, yes, bugs. To this day in the market stalls of Mexico City, you can buy fried grasshoppers, and I am told they are tasty. And the and occasionally some ceremonial bites of one's conquered and sacrificed enemy. Beans provided protein. There were cucumbers, there were tomatoes, there were chiles, potatoes, maize, a whole bunch of the things that you and I think of when we think about dinner that come out of the garden, came out of the garden that was central Mexico before the fall. And I am struck by the irony that this disease is coming from there as well, because it does have something to do with swine, regardless of who originated it. It has something to do with swine, which once again proved to be a gift of the white man. You know, you remember that old saying, beware of Greeks bearing gifts, referring to, of course, the fall of Troy and the Trojan horse. The whole world would do well to take to heart the notion of being wary of white folks bearing gifts. Oh, we're going to bring you civilization! Aw, darn, you're dead. Of course, if you read Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel, you will find out. You will read his theory that that it was through the interplay of animal husbandry that European and Middle Eastern types became inured. Well, first exposed and then inured to a variety of illnesses that went on to kill native peoples the world over. If one doesn't take the book of Genesis literally, if one considers it allegorical and symbolic, one may make a compelling argument that Eden was in the Americas and that the fall came with the arrival of the white man. Kind of hard to get around that. Poxes and sheep and pig-borne illnesses destroyed as much as 80% of the population of native peoples in the Americas. Seems rather a steep price to pay for Christianity and civilization. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Jump into the conversation. Share as you will. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. We'll be back.
minutes before the hour. Just a little interlude there. Pink Floyd and pigs. Seemed appropriate. Haha, charade you are. That's C-H-R-A-D-E. That's what you and I recognize as charade, which is, of course, makes more sense than perhaps we let initially consider. Because, of course, corporate America is a charade. It's a false front for nothing but neo-Randian anarchism, in which people can be sacrificed for the satisfaction of holy profit. If there are any Muslims in the audience, I'm not talking about Muhammad. I'm talking about holy, P-R-O-F-I-T, holy prophet. The most vile false god of all the false gods, and trust me, they're all false gods, Mammon. Mammon. By the way, David in South Carolina wants you to know and hook up with him because you might find it interesting. He is tweeting the show via Twitter. So look for Lucky Rooster, L-U-C-K-Y-R-O-O-S-T-E-R, those of you who tweet. Look for Lucky Rooster on Twitter. And David in South Carolina will tweet the show as it goes along, which is just another little multimedia addition to the show that I find terribly, terribly, terribly cool. And we will go to the phones now. Susan is with us. News Ninja Susan from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan.
Hi there.
How are you? Oink.
Yeah, oink, oink. I have a little fun fact for you, which will probably knock you on your butt. But then again, maybe not. You are a trivia person like I am. You said 30% of that one town was infected.
Yes. La Gloria in Veracruz State.
I am quoting from a portion of an article on pandemics. The Black Death started in the 1300s, 800 years after the last outbreak, bubonic plague returned to Europe. Starting in Asia, the disease reached the Mediterranean and Europe in 1348, possibly from Italian merchants fighting in the Crimea, and killed 20 to 30 million Europeans in 6 years, a third of the total population. That little village has just reached the same percentage as the Black Death did.
Very interesting. Yes, indeed. And, of course, it remains to be seen. The state of emergency that was announced here in the United States?
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are still trying to figure out, Susan, exactly what that means. But, one of the things that bothers me about this particular, about these sorts of situations is that they're indefensible. Largely indefensible. And they also breed hysteria and insanity. You mentioned the Black Death in Europe. Well, at the time that it was hitting Europe, especially Italy, it hit Greece and then Italy, and then went up the Italian peninsula, across the Alps, and into France. And it was there, in Europe, that hysterical people who were willing to believe in the fantasies of religion began doing some of the first European pogroms. Murdering Jews
later
because
followed by the Inquisition.
Yeah, but murdering Jews because they had decided that Jews were poisoning the wells.
Well, the historical references I read were a lot of it was also because the percentage of the people who died in the ghettos was a lot less, and so they figured, well, these people are causing it. Never mind the fact that these Jews in the ghetto being 99% kosher and believing in cleanliness didn't allow fleas a chance to...
Well, and that's all, yeah, that's also along about the same time that people start being burned for witchery because for suggesting that people bathe. And so, you know, when I say that I'm expecting Lou Dobbs to show up on air howling about Mexicans while wearing a surgical mask any day now, I expect him, I expect Glenn Beck and their ilk to be absolute ground zero for the hysteria that will blossom. Now, I'm not going to be hysterical about it. This is a liberal audience, an intelligent audience, and we, you know, we're science people, right? So we'll get...
I'm not so much scared of the disease as I am about the yahoos going nuts over it.
Precisely my point. Because, the Obama administration has put in place what they're calling passive surveillance at the border. Nobody gets in who appears to be sick.
Yep.
And that's not an, you know, that, it's not wholly irrational. But it will not, no matter what they do, it will not be enough to suit the lunatic right wing.
Well, especially when you realize that with this particular strain of flu, you can be contagious and still show no symptoms.
Right. I've seen, some of the stuff that I've seen writing on says that, you know, if you do get the bug,
stay home.
Stay home unless you have to be hospitalized. And if you do stay home, do not come out until 2 days, two full days after all of your symptoms have stopped manifesting themselves.
Yeah. But these people, they will just... This is going to... This has all the... It's tinderbox waiting to go off. All it needs is...
Yeah, as, well, especially especially thanks to the work over the years of the minute men... who have tried to fan the flames of bigotry and persecution and hate. And I can't, well, I guess, you know, it would be when, it used to be when I would get off the air in Beckley and drive home, they would do a rerun immediately after me. There would be a rerun of the Savage Wiener.
Oh, God.
And I can't tell you the number of times, and here's how the rant goes. I am a Ph.D. microbiology botanist type. And I'm telling you that these vermin coming in from Mexico, they've got all kinds of diseases. And I'm telling you that one of these days they're going to bring us a pandemic and it's going to kill people all over the place. And it's going to be because of these filthy vermin Mexicans.
Of course, I firmly believe that the closest dear old Michael the Savage Wiener ever got to a microscope was somebody, was when a doctor, a lab tech, was checking him for his latest dose of PD.
Well, you know, I mean, he does hold a PhD from the University of California at Berkeley, and he's still mad at them because they wouldn't tenure him. But it's in, like, wild food gathering or some such. He, among other things, he dodged the Vietnam draft by boogieing out to Fiji and hanging out in the jungle until the heat was off.
In other words, he has the basic equivalent of an advanced basket weaving degree.
You could say that. But I guarantee, I mean, this is Monday. The story broke over the weekend. He goes on the air, I think, at 4 p.m. Pacific time, so...
it's going to get here.
He'll be going on the air in about 9 minutes, and I guarantee you he will be screaming about the dirty Mexicans.
Yeah, and I really doubt that he will be screaming about the fact that Susan Collins helped to strip out the money for pandemic...
Yeah, I know.
We aren't supposed to mention that part, are we?
No.
She being a Republican at all.
Yeah, all that national security, waterboarding, torturing, shooting, killing, maiming, putting people in little tiny rooms and little tiny boxes, all in the name of protecting the nation. But Arlen Specter and what's-her-face? How did I forget it so fast?
Susan Collins.
Yeah, Susan Collins. $780 million for pandemic preparedness and the stimulus package. And the best part of it was what they said about it. Did you run across that?
Yeah, but I can't remember it offhand. I've been going through so much stuff today.
Well, what was said is that...
Need this in a stimulus bill?
No. There's funding to help improve our preparedness for a pandemic flu. There's funding to help improve cybersecurity. What does that have to do with an economic stimulus package? That's January the 31st.
If we get a pandemic in this stupid country and the entire country shuts down, you'll find out real quick.
Well, you know, Repiglick and Susan are just walking examples of the adage that those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Do you know why one of the reasons why the Renaissance got birthed in Europe, if there can said to have been a good thing to do with the Black Death? One of the reasons the Renaissance got birthed was because
conservatives died off.
Well, and in that, yeah, a bunch of church people. I mean, that people dying so fast they couldn't bury them, which only made it worse.
Yeah.
And utterly devastated the feudal economy so that whoever could come up and deliver services and deliver goods was who came up and delivered services and delivered goods. And in many instances, that was a new thing that came along that was called the merchant class.
Yep.
Then again, there's Susan Collins on MSNBC on February the 5th, 2009. I think everybody in the room is concerned about a pandemic flu, but does it belong in this bill? Should we have $870 million in this bill? No, we should not.
I prefer the label TSTL. It's from the romance novel readers about certain female heroines. Too stupid to live.
Yep, I figured that's what it was. Then there's good old Arlen Specter, Susan.
Oh, yes.
Both of these, Susan Collins and Arlen Specter, are people who are routinely referred to in the for-profit media as moderate Republicans. Moderates. They're moderates. They're not crazy like Newt Gingrich or Michelle Bachmann. They're moderates. But yet, here's Arlen Specter. After the funding was for the pandemic preparedness was stripped out of the stimulus bill, Arlen Specter responded to the following question on Fox News. Megyn Kelly asks him, okay, $780 million for pandemic flu preparedness, in or out? Senator Specter, out. Very important projects. I took the lead along with Tom Harkin on some massive funding for pandemic flu, but it belongs in our regular appropriations bill. Morons. And again, it's not that complicated. All you have to do is look at the history of disease outbreaks.
I am appalled by the amount of times that I see challenges that this country is facing or the world is facing. And these people with these advanced degrees are running around with their heads like chickens with their heads cut off. They don't know what to do, or they don't know what's right or what's wrong or what's moral. And I'm saying, read a history book, you twits. I can tell you, I just barely got out of high school. Here's what you do. Read a history book.
And the next thing you know, you're all informed and stuff. But there's a larger point, I think, beyond the swine flu business about these moderate Republicans, Susan. The only people who believe that they're moderates are the mainstream media, the for-profit media.
Exactly.
Who have a vested interest in portraying them as such.
Yeah.
You know, Arlen Specter weenied out on the Employee Free Choice Act. And yeah, I can connect two dots on that too. Because again, I think back to the Pilgrim's Pride chicken processing plant here in West Virginia, where workers who were so tormented by their employers engaged in shocking levels of sadism against the birds that they were supposed to be sending to market. You know, tearing off beaks with pliers just to hear the chickens scream. Taking them and swinging them by the feet and bashing them into concrete walls, stomping on them, and then sending them to market for you to eat.
Oh, lovely.
And those were non-union shops. Because again, just like a non-union coal mine, a guy there can't say, "Hey, I ain't going in that. You ain't putting me down in that damn puddle where there ain't no air." A non-union guy can't say that because he'll be fired. A union man can say, "Hey, I see violations. I'm writing the violations." And the same thing happens at all kinds of union shops, and people who have worked union jobs in manufacturing plants can testify to this. You have a safer production facility, whether it's a matter of killing hogs or mining coal. Or anything, or nurses delivering services in hospitals, or people doing janitorial work.
Service.
When you have a union shop, you have a safer, more effective shop.
And I can tell you that from personal experience. The job I used to work in was telephone tech support, and it was unfortunately non-union because the company would have shut down the building first. And they had a big contract, and they put a bunch of call reps downstairs in this one room, and nobody could say yay or nay. The problem was, this one room was basically a meeting room, and it had one exit and no windows. OSHA wandered in there on an unannounced inspection. Actually, I think they were tipped. Took one look and said, "You get these people out of here or we're shutting the building down." But it took the state government to do it. If we'd had a union shop, they wouldn't have been able to start it up in the first place. The thing had been going for 6 months.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's all because, I mean, if it turns out that this did start at this Granjas Carol facility in Veracruz State in Mexico, Susan, we can point the finger. And yes, I know whenever you do that, the Repiglicans like to say, "Well, we don't want to play the blame game." Well just because you've got a cute two-word rhyming phrase does not mean that it's invalid. How are we ever going to learn from our mistakes if we do not place responsibility squarely where it belongs? And the fact of the matter remains that within the so-called capitalist, but more appropriately described as anarcho-randian business structure that obtains today across the globe, in that structure, there is no room for ethics. There is no room for morality. The only thing that matters is holy profit. And the whole world can be sickened.
Listen to this. An animal health expert at the UN Food and Agriculture Organization in Rome said they're flying a bunch of veterinarians to Mexico. Said there's been no reports of sick or dying swine, but warned that fears of surrounding the outbreak could have a devastating effect on the pork industry.
There you go. We're worried about the pork industry.
Yeah, geez, who cares? According to the AP, I don't know if you've seen this, 23 minutes ago, AP announced WHO has moved the pandemic alert level to level 4. They bumped it up.
Jesus. Well, all we can do is, and you know, people who are in concentrated metropolitan areas are at, to one degree or another, a greater risk than are people in lesser populated areas.
Yeah, and
so
to the people who are
precautions
listening,
have to be taken.
Yeah, and the people who are listening who have young ones or people who are elderly or with compromised immune systems, board up. Stay home if you can.
Wash your hands.
And stay away from the crowds. That's your best bet. Stay home.
And don't buy into right-wing hysteria. Susan, thank you very much, dear.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. We're going to stay home.
Sounds good. Take care.
You too, and love to everybody.
All right, thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. So that's the first hour of the program. What's on your mind? Don't be shy. I don't like to filibobster. I can, and I'm rather good and effective at it. But this is about you. This is the only conversation radio program. This is the only conversation radio network that offers you a chance to get said whatever it is that you want to get said. It's not 3 minutes and gone. We're a pretty rare bird. Maybe that was a bad analogy. But you know what I mean. What we are is America's listener-supported liberal voice. What we are is activist radio. What we are is the horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Twelve minutes past seven here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Welcome to Hour 2 of this Monday night edition. Last Monday in April. 27th of April, 2009. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep the horn alive, who helped us make it to a little past halfway for what we need every month. If you want to push it a little further toward past halfway, you are more than welcome to do so, and it will be graciously appreciated. Not making that goal means sacrifices on the broadcast end and people behind the broadcast end of the program. But we are grateful for the support that we do get. There's a button that there's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. You'll see a link that says contribute. Go there, and the button is there. Or you can snail mail. The snail mail address is there as well. Programming note, Guy James is out this week. He is traveling for his real job. By real, I mean paying. See, we come, it's that money thing again. You know, we've lost good hosts over the years to the fact that, you know, people have to earn a living. Still hear from Joe Vecchio periodically. He had to go and try to find some way to live. Still hopes to come back someday. But, well, you understand. You know. Otherwise, you wouldn't contribute. Just a little something to round out some of what the flu topic that started the program. Sneeze coming on. Stand by. Nope, went away. You remember last week, we talked at some length about the secession fever gripping places like Texas. The lead secessionist in Texas, when Ron Paul's not running his mouth about it,
The lead secessionist in Texas is, of course, Governor Rick Goodhair Perry. For liberals and progressives and decent folk out there, Goodhair will forever stick on Rick Perry because of, bless her heart, wherever in the universe's energy she is, because of Molly Ivins. Well, secessionist Rick Perry hasn't seceded yet, and as long as he hasn't seceded, he wants him some of that federal money. Made a request today, and it's a strange request coming from a secessionist. Today, Rick Goodhair Perry, governor of Texas, forwarded a request to the Centers for Disease Control. Governor Rick Goodhair, secession now, secession forever, Perry, requested 37,430 courses of antiviral medications from the Strategic National Stockpile for Texas to stop the spread of swine flu. Well, hybrid swine, avian, human flu, if you want to be accurate about it. Yes? The secessionist suddenly has found himself interested in remaining an American. Texas is free to open up its own Centers for Disease Control and pay all the scientists. I mean, after all, they object to, they want to be, what was the phrase he used? I want Texas to be in control of its own destiny. We're a sovereign state. Well, Mr. Sovereign Governor, get off your happy ass and go and fire yourself up a disease laboratory and see how quick you can come up with some flu vaccines. I mean, you got some good universities there. You got your University of Texas. You got your Texas A&M. You got your Baylor. You got your Texas Christian University. Hey, call Baylor and SMU and Texas Christian University and ask them to pray the flu away. Why don't you, Governor Rick? Because you ain't going to be making no, medicine. You ain't going to be making no vaccines. Think you might want to stay in the union after all, Governor Goodhair? A Daily Coast Research 2000 poll found that 37% of Texans, 37%, and 51% of Republicans in the state of Texas agree with the idea of seceding. Yeah, really. Tell you what. For a state the size of Texas, 37,430 courses of flu vaccine are not that many. So I suggest we're in a place where decisions may have to be made about who gets vaccinated and who doesn't. I've got an answer. I've got a suggestion. Before anybody, you just have a couple of little check boxes. Are you in favor of secession? If you click yes, you're out of luck. No vaccine for you. But if they check no, I'm not in favor of secession, there's a second box. This is all just triage. You know, triage is the means by which you determine those most needing medical care are the ones who receive it. And if they check no to secession, there's a second box that says, do you believe in evolution? And if they check no on that, sorry, no vaccine for you, because evolution is the theoretical underpinnings that allow scientists to craft these antiviral vaccines. At which point, everybody who has been turned away can be sent to TCU
and SMU and Baylor for prayer. Nothing but prayer. Heck, I got a feeling the Texas being Texas, 37,000, how many was it? 37,430 doses may be more than enough after you get rid of the secessionists and the evolution deniers. What do you think? I mean, after all, you wouldn't want to offend anybody's religious beliefs by making them take a demon vaccine. So Texas governor wants to be president of Texas, by the way. Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry, hypocrite. That's all, just a hypocrite. Did you catch all Foxed Up last night? If you didn't, you missed something. Be there. Download the podcast, whatever. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday evenings. John Fox has a dandy good time. There was a nice crowd in the chat room. Jump right in. During the course of the program, however, John played audio of apparently the poster girl for insane conservative repig-licking ideals. And it was nuts. Oh, no, last night's show was lost, John? Ah! Well, let's see. John, if you've got it... you got a link handy to the Michelle Bachmann audio, please? Because I feel funny talking about how insane this is without playing it for you. But there's no word but insane. This is a discourse by Michelle Bachmann, and you may have already heard it on some other program. This is a discourse by Michelle Bachmann on, it's like one of those World War II era training films or paranoid Eisenhower era the films about nuclear power. You know, the atom, your friend. And I guess you could say that Michelle Bachmann's theme was our friend, carbon dioxide. No, really, I'm not kidding. It'll be here in a minute or so. This is too good not to play. I didn't necessarily know I was going to go here with the program this evening, and that's why I don't have the audio already ready to go. But I decided to go here because hot on the heels of John's show last night comes word today that apparently Michelle Bachmann's little our friend carbon dioxide rant has gotten legs and taken root in the good old-fashioned for-profit media. Yeah, for merely the cost of a newspaper, you can pick up a print and ink dead tree version of the news and see Michelle Bachmann, what passes for thought in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between Michelle Bachmann's ears and pass for brains. You can see it validated by a paid professional journalist. Huh. Yeah, really not kidding. And the dead tree paper in question would be none other than the Washington Post. Yep. The Washington Post that gives space, precious space and ink to insane Luddites like George Will and Charles Krauthammer, has now further sullied its own reputation with the rantings of a columnist by the name of Robert Samuelson. Now, I'm looking at his picture now. He just looks like somebody that got beaten up all his life on the playground.
Yeah, Ferg? He looks a little on the
side. Little on the neo-maxi zoom dweeby side of life. And it's just sad. It's just sad to see what professional journalism has become. As people engaged in the industry wonder and worry about their jobs, well, here's the answer to your question. Here's the answer to what happened to print journalism in America. Michelle Bachmann happened to print journalism in America indirectly. The adoption of Michelle Bachmann's talking points by Robert Samuelson is what happened to print journalism in America. Honestly, this is pulp. This isn't journalism. This isn't even professional writing, what Robert Samuelson is doing. And it really, really is why newspapers are dying. In this particular case, Newsweek and Washington Post columnist Robert Samuelson said that the called for 10% reduction in carbon dioxide is explained not by science or not by the fact that we're rapidly screwing up the planet. No, Robert Samuelson says a better explanation for the contrived urgency is that bureaucrats need to impose their draconian rules before people realize they are unneeded. Yep, there's no honesty behind the debate and concerns about increasing carbon dioxide in the air. No. No, Robert Samuelson writes instead, there's no evidence man-made CO2, even if it increases temperature, is harmful. Indeed, some argue, there's that Fox News-style handbook again, some argue, you know, like the guy down on the corner wearing the cast-off clothing with who sleeps under the bridge and drinks screw top wine. Some argue that warmer climes would benefit mankind by increasing crop productivity and reducing deaths from severe cold. Yes. None of that matters when government is intent on forcing change. Lord, this is the kind of stuff that makes me worry about the future of the human race. It makes me worry that there is not enough groundswell of support to fend off the nuttiness, the stupidity, and the homicidally dangerousness
of the right way. Robert Samuelson says, utopian thinking. No, I'm sorry. Utopian tinkering, beyond the influence of voters, arrogantly presumes ivory tower bureaucrats know better. No, you dumbass, we're talking about scientists, not bureaucrats. Scientists do know better. I don't know. Do the comparison contrast work for me, for yourself. Who knows better about the climate, a scientist or a political ideologue like Robert Samuelson? Just ask him. Who knows more about the climate, scientists or someone who believes who believes this?
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah.
Play it again.
Who do you trust? Utopian tinkering beyond the influence of voters arrogantly presumes ivory tower bureaucrats know better. Now, the scientists do, Mr. Samuelson, the scientists do, of which you are not one. Unfortunately, we may only be in the early stages of administrative governance. The Obama administration and Congress are looking at California's global warming tactics as a model for a national scheme. Yeah, because there were no schemes involved, Bob, when the Bush administration was out there touting the healthy forest initiatives that encouraged people to cut down trees, or the clean air initiative that encouraged corporate polluters to pump more pollution into the atmosphere. Those weren't schemes, now were they, Mr. Samuelson? Oh, heck no. But to understand where this argument comes from, there's no evidence man-made CO2, even if it increases temperature, is harmful. To understand where that comes from, you've got to go to Michelle Bachmann. Whew. Crazier than a sprayed roach. Nuts. Loony. Crazy.
It's about carbon dioxide. Well, what is carbon dioxide?
Carbon dioxide. Do you have that class? Carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide. Can you say that with me? Carbon dioxide. I knew you could. That's very good, class.
Let's just go to a fundamental question. Carbon dioxide, Mr. Speaker, is a natural byproduct of nature. Carbon dioxide is natural. It occurs in Earth.
Yes, it does. And it bubbles out of a lake in Africa and periodically kills people. But it's okay if it kills people, Mr. Speaker, because carbon dioxide is a naturally occurring substance. Yes. Natural.
It is a part of the regular life cycle of Earth. In fact, life on planet Earth can't even exist without carbon dioxide. So necessary is it to human life, to animal life, to plant life, to the oceans, to the vegetation that's on the earth, to the fowl that flies in the air. We need to have carbon dioxide as a part of the fundamental life cycle of Earth.
We cannot afford a carbon dioxide gap. Oh, Lord.
Carbon dioxide.
Well, sister, let me explain you something.
Carbon dioxide is, in fact, necessary to plant life
because of transpiration and photosynthesis. Plants need, we breathe oxygen, plants breathe carbon dioxide and exhale oxygen. But there's a problem. Ms. Bachmann, you and your corporate cronies have done such a lovely job at deforesting the planet
and the very lungs of the planet, that the planet can't deal with the carbon dioxide that your corporate the polluter cronies are pumping into the system. Really?
As a matter of fact, carbon dioxide is portrayed as harmful, but there isn't even one study that can be produced that shows that carbon dioxide is a harmful gas.
I guess she's right. I guess it's not a study per se, but when they used to bring way back in the day, when they used to bring dead miners out of coal mines, who had been overcome by carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, both happened. Would that qualify? See, there's something that happens down in a coal mine called black damp. White damp is carbon monoxide. Black damp is a mixture of unbreathable gases that include nitrogen, argon, carbon dioxide, and water vapor. And it replaces oxygen in the air in an enclosed space. And in replacing the oxygen becomes, and here's a scientific technical term for you, Ms. Bachman, it becomes an asphyxiant. It happens in the holds of ships. It happens in tunnels. It happens in wells. It happens in sewers. And it happens in mines, especially in poorly ventilated or abandoned coal mines, because coal literally absorbs oxygen. It did after, well, never mind. And it does naturally, it's a naturally occurring process. Coal naturally exudes carbon dioxide. Even when you're not burning it, coal exudes carbon dioxide. Imagine that. Coal releases more carbon dioxide in the summer months. Heat makes it more facilitates that process. Black damp. There is no study whatsoever that shows that carbon dioxide is harmful. I want all you people in Minnesota, my constituents, to lock and load. They're coming after your carbon dioxide, and nobody likes a flat Pepsi.
There isn't one such study, because carbon dioxide is not a harmful gas. It is a harmless gas. Carbon.
You lying twit. This is one of those moments when you'd like to just sort of throw one of those black bag hoods over her head, build the time machine, and take her back to a mining community in West Virginia, and let her watch the wailing widows as their husbands' bodies are pulled from the hole, and let her tell them, to the extent that they even speak English, having been more or less hijacked here from the desperation of Europe to the desperation of America, let her tell them that carbon dioxide is a harmless gas.
harmless. Yeah.
Dioxide is natural. It is not harmful. It is a part of Earth's life cycle. And yet we're being told that we have to reduce this natural substance and reduce the American standard of living to...
Liar!
We do have to reduce the substance because the substance will kill us, just like it kills in the form of black damp. It will kill us. The Earth is a closed system for the most part. And really, really, being killed is the ultimate diminution in standard of life, the standard of living. Wouldn't you say? Because I would. But it's not true that reducing CO2 means a reduction in standard of living. The only standard of living that a reduction in CO2 means is a reduction in the standard of living of creeps like Don Blankenship and their creepy enablers like Michelle Bachmann. If I didn't know better, I'd swear that she was breathing pure CO2 when she was giving this this little the BS oration on the House floor.
Create an arbitrary reduction in something that is naturally occurring in the earth. Well, we're told the crux of this problem is human activity. It's humans that are creating more carbon dioxide. Is that true or is that false? Well, carbon dioxide is a natural part of Earth's atmosphere. But carbon dioxide is perhaps 3% of the total atmosphere that's in the Earth. So if you take a pie chart and you have all of Earth's atmosphere, carbon dioxide is perhaps 3% of that total.
Now, anybody know what the most prevalent gas is in Earth's air? I do believe, Ferg, it is nitrogen. We'll have to get you a toaster. And how about oxygen? How much of Earth's atmosphere is oxygen? I'm sure I'll see an answer in the chat room in a minute. But it's fairly small as well. So, if you have elevating carbon dioxide, something else has to go somewhere. Yeah, about 19%. 19% is oxygen, and a whole bunch of everything else makes up the rest, of which 3%, if she's correct, is carbon dioxide. 19 to 21%, okay. So what happens if carbon dioxide goes up? Because oxygen, it's an inert gas, O2. Whereas carbon dioxide is a compound. When oxygen atoms marry a carbon atom. Oh, 0.03%. 380 parts per million is 0.03% of CO2. Thanks, thanks, Dave from Canada. So you see how dangerous it becomes when ignorant right wingers are allowed to play with. Because see, they don't have any regard for science. What's a fundamentalist who says that Jesus will protect us against global warming doing arguing science and numbers in the first place? Again, she needs to go and, I hope there's no swine flu vaccine for Michelle Bachmann because there's
no evolution. Evolution is a demonic plot to keep people from believing in Jesus.
You think I'm kidding? I'm not.
What part of human activity creates carbon dioxide. If carbon dioxide is a negligible gas and it's only 3% of Earth's atmosphere, what part is human activity? Human activity contributes perhaps 3% of the 3%. In other words, human activity is maybe...
She needs to go play the lottery. She's got a three thing going on.
Be 3% contributing to the 3% of carbon dioxide that's in Earth's atmosphere. It's so negligible, it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent. It can hardly be quantified.
Okay. It's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent that's so negligible as to be hardly be able to be quantified. Here's a question. When they take a murderer, or took a murderer, because we do horrible, you know, I don't think we do this so much anymore, because we do the horizontal crucifixion. But they used to take a murderer and they put him in a sealed room, and they dropped some negligible tablets of, I do believe, sodium cyanide into a bucket of water, and a very negligible amount of cyanide gas was released into the atmosphere of the death chamber. Just a little bit. But it was still sufficient to cause death. The Nazis never used that much Zyklon B. It didn't take that much. Just a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent of the available air to breathe. But it sure enough did the trick for, you know, 6 million Jews and millions more gypsies and political dissidents and gays and undesirables. Just a fraction of a percent of a fraction of a percent. So there is that BS. Carbon dioxide is our friend. You can almost see the happy little carbon dioxide molecule on her visual representation flip chart behind her. Hi, kids, I'm CO2. See you too.
What a moron. Ah, sulfuric acid. Thank you, Cossack. See, I don't know that much about the death chamber. But the point is, it's still a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent of the breathable substance in the room. But it's still deadly. This is hard to swallow. And in living testament to the adage that... a lie can get around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. Robert Samuelson. There's no evidence man-made CO2, even if it increases temperatures, is harmful. It's the same argument that Michelle Bachmann made. You know, it's just like the Obama carbon tax. MIT study says what? MIT study says... that it might cost $310 a person to have a carbon tax. But by the time it gets into the hands of the repiglic and wildly lunatic right, $310 has become $3,100. Just like 0.3% becomes 3% in the sick, twisted, sad, gray, thin, settling, splashing around between Michelle Bachmann's ears that pass for brains. And lo and behold, there it is. I want to be an editor. You know, I used to think it was Mark Twain, but it wasn't. It was a guy whose name I can't remember now, who said that every editor should have a pimp for a brother-in-law so he'd have someone to look up to. I want to be an editor. Because apparently, if you're an editor at the Washington Post or Newsweek, well, hell's bells, you can just sit around drinking Tanqueray through a straw and let crazy crap get by you.
like George Will, like Charles Krauthammer, and like Robert Samuelson. I mean, come on! Does the Washington Post not have a science editor? Damn! How do you let a sentence like that by?
There's no evidence man-made CO2, even if it increases temperatures, is harmful.
That is such a patently false statement. First of all, man-made CO2. There is,
and I'm probably going to contribute a little bit of confusion to the argument, but there's no such thing as man-made CO2.
There are processes that are man-made that release and create CO2. But you see, this is how the dissembling right wing tries to do an argument. It is what our critic at large, Reverbo, refers to as false equivocation.
Reverbo just wrote in to say, the new journalism promotes exactly that. 99 scientists say the world is round, and one right-wing fundamentalist moron says it's square, and suddenly we have some kind of debate going on. You know, some people say the world is square. They've actually hijacked the concept of fairness to make the case for giving stupidity a shot in mainstream public discourse. Sigh. If only everyone was smart enough to see through it. But it's like that. Man-made CO2. No, they are man-made processes whose end result is CO2. Like the burning of coal. Now, I'm going to the phones here just in a second. But we can't talk about this without going back a night to CBS News and Scott Pelley's interview of Jim Rogers. Jim Rogers is CEO of Duke Energy, among the largest electricity companies in the country, has dozens of coal-fired power plants, is personally responsible for the destruction of the homes and lives and communities of thousands upon thousands of southern West Virginians and Appalachians in general. So if you're a Horn listener, you've known for a long time that there's no such thing as clean coal. Well, Jim Rogers knows it too. Jim Rogers' coal plants, remember, man-made devices that create CO2, that pump out CO2, whose end product is CO2. Jim Rogers' Duke Energy coal-fired power plants crank out about 112 million tons. And I ain't even going to try to convert that to pounds. That's 2,000 times 112 million. That's 224 million with three more zeros. And he says, we need to go to work on global warming now. It's critical that we start to act in this country. Well, Mr. Rogers, if that's the case, how do you want to how do you want to go to work on global warming? By burning more coal. Don't. That's like the drunk who says he needs to sober up by drinking more tequila. Really? You know, I'll sound a lot more sober after I get a few drinks in me. Yeah, any of you who are familiar with addictive behavior knows that kind of conduct, and this is that. So Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes asks Jim Rogers, who is in the process of forcing a new 800-megawatt coal-fired power plant called Cliffside down the throats of North Carolinians who damned well don't want it. Jim Rogers, who plans to build more coal-fired power plants, not less. Scott Pelley asks him, How much has Duke Energy invested in carbon sequestration technology so far? Answer, quote, we have not invested any dollars in the technology per se. Now, they've been part and parcel of investing a lot of dollars in the advertising campaign to market the gimmick known as clean coal that does not exist. But as for actually investing in carbon sequestration technology, nah, not so much. We have spent a lot of time and money reviewing and analyzing various technologies. And while we haven't spent the money on sequestration technology, we spent the time and energy we're going to co-invest with the government when this technology evolves. Yep, it's evolution. Just got to wait around for the, you know, the primate to turn into the human. Couple of million years, no big deal. Jesus, Jim, by the time you get your carbon sequestration technology taken care of, we'll all be morons from the damn mercury and we'll probably have flippers. Seeing as how you're going to wait for the technology to evolve, where's that $3.8, $3.4 billion for clean coal? What the hell's it going to do if you're not even interested in looking into it? Oh, it's going to pay for more damned internet ads on liberal sites. Oh, the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. Oh, hey, liberal, click on this. Look at our clean coal. Oh. Jim Rogers says, our goal line is to substantially reduce our carbon footprint to decarbonize our business by 2050. Now, that's our goal. My goal is to stop drinking tomorrow. If you'll hand me the tequila today. No tequila, pure grain alcohol will do fine. I'm going to stop. Absolutely, my goal is to stop drinking day after tomorrow as soon as I sober up. No, really. Day after tomorrow, I am going straight. I'm going to get on the wagon, and I'm never going to see those pink elephants anymore, and I'm going to be a sober guy. Sometime next week, I'm going to sober up and quit drinking next month, and I'm sober next year. That's when I'm going to quit drinking, is 2 years from now. For right now, though, I need to... another dead soldier! I need another bottle! I had just finished my last case. I needed a new case. And these are the people that are the captains of industry. These are the damn geniuses! Woo! I think I'm happy being stupid. Honest to Pete. You got Maria Ganeau, who just won the Goldman Prize, the Environmental Nobel, last week. You got Judy Bonds, who won it in 2003. And these are working class folks. Brilliant, dedicated, persistent, working class folks. And they know. They don't believe. They damned well know that there's no such thing as clean coal. Jim Rogers? Oh, he's a genius. And he's one of our betters, and he's a multimillionaire. And some organizations even speak favorably of him because he at least acknowledges global warming and the role that the human activity has in it. But, you know, that's like somebody who does waterboarding and acknowledges that it's torture but keeps on doing it! Jesus! It's just stunning. Here, before I pop a vein, let's go to the phones. Hey, Dave.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. You know, I was just typing in. I was just about to type because I didn't know I was going to be on yet. I love it when you get off on a rant, you know, because what made me, the first time I listened to Head On Radio, you were on form, just like you were right now. And I thought, God, finally somebody on there who gets as mad about stuff as I do. And that's what made me come back.
I hate stupid, Dave. I just despise stupid.
Oh, I despise stupid just as much as you do. You know, you were talking about studying all this stuff around carbon sequestration and whatnot. You know what I'd like to do with these people who want to study it some more? I'd like to stand them in the middle of the freeway on a busy afternoon and say, okay, let's set up a study group and see how long it's going to be before one of these cars hits you. Same thing.
Yeah.
Because there's a big, nasty car coming towards us right now. And we want to study whether it's going to hit us or not, or do we want to just get out the damn way? Really, it's as simple as that. It might miss you, but why would you stand there and take the chance?
Yeah, Russian roulette, chicken, yeah, any...
Exactly. And that's what these...
Mumbledy Peg?
I don't want to kind of call them people, really, but I suppose they are. But, I mean, the idiot that you had on earlier, I didn't catch your name. I'd only just signed on then.
Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, I mean, if brains were dynamite, she couldn't mess her hair up. You know? I mean, the stuff that was coming out of her face there was just so beyond stupid. I mean, stupid just didn't cover it. You know?
Yeah.
And how do people, I typed in the chat room, how do people as stupid as this get into a position where they're making decisions for other people? It's beyond belief that we allow these idiots to do this.
But see, I guess you would say, Dave, that this is a nuanced position. On the likes of Michelle Bachmann. She knows better. She knows that she's participating in a carny hustle. But she's very she's very well paid to participate in that carny hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's well paid, she doesn't give a rat's rear end about me, mine, my community, my state, my neighbors, my country, or my planet. Because she's well paid.
Has she got kids? Has she got family? Does she care about them?
Well, no, but see, they think that because they've got money that they are away from it.
How the hell? They're on the same damn planet. How could he get away from this?
I'm not kidding. She's really said that God will prevent global warming, Dave.
Oh, well, then at that point you're done, aren't you? I mean, what I always want to say to people when they start going off about God is show me the evidence.
It's my faith. You can't. It's my faith. You can't say nothing mean about it because it's my faith, and I'll cry. And I got a right to believe. I mean, I got a right to this insanity.
You can believe the moon's made of green cheese, but that doesn't mean that you have the right to force me to base my lifestyle on your belief that the moon's made of sodding green cheese. Just because you flaming believe it doesn't mean you can impose it on me, does it? Well, it seems that it does. But that's where it all falls down. You get people come knocking on your door saying you should, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist or whatever. And people accept that and say, well, that's fine because they're going around and they're doing what they believe. If I went knocking on doors and said, okay, I'm an atheist and I think you should be too, how long do you think it'd be before the boys in blue came and cut me off and said, stop hassling people? But that's my belief. And I believe I'm right. So why the hell can't I do that?
But see, that's what I mean, Dave, when I say that at least in the United States, and I recognize that you're in Canada and everything, but in the United States, the religion, the First Amendment that guarantees freedom of the press, the First Amendment that guarantees freedom to assemble, freedom to petition for redress of grievances, all those things are by the boards, all right? The only thing the First Amendment is deemed to be good for anymore is a life support system for the religion industry.
And it's definitely an industry.
Religionists believe... And there's that word. Religionists believe, Dave, that the First Amendment conveys upon them sacred cow status. No offense to our Indian friends. But it believes that it makes them
beyond reproach and beyond reproof.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you look at things like, you look at war, God on our side. I mean, every side says God's on his side in a war, don't they? You know, I mean, during World War II, when the kamikaze guys were flying off, you know, they were blessed and all that stuff, you know? And when the British soldiers were going into battle, they had the reverend up front saying this is God's will and all that kind of nonsense.
Right, and the German belt plate said, Gott mit uns.
Exactly. You know, I mean, what the hell? How can anyone, without a scrap of evidence, claim any of this stuff and use it against other people? The thing that always boggles my mind, and I've come back to this many times, is if I was in a court of law, I would have to swear on a book that wouldn't stand up to the standards of evidence that I'm about to be put in front of.
Oh, that's nice.
That's what boggles my mind. Just the logic of that. You know?
I do know.
Where do you go from there?
And the answer is that thing that drives me to such pessimism, Dave. You can't have a legitimate hope for the future that has any reasonable degree of rational certainty about it as long as these people are where they are in the halls of power.
But the thing is that, really, scientific literacy in the world is mind-bogglingly low.
I'm living proof. I go far beyond my training most nights and just hope that I'm getting it right.
But for me, I make my living with art, but science was always my big thing, and I need two lives, really. I need to be a scientist professionally and then an artist for fun in one life and then vice versa in the other. Because whenever I'm doing sort of scientific-y stuff, I wish I was doing art. And when I'm doing art, I wish I was doing science. So I really keep up on this stuff. I read, and read a lot more. I mean, anything. Cosmology, particle physics, geology, anything. And I love all this stuff, so I've got a fairly decent handle on things, I think. I flatter myself that I have. But when you hear these people speak, I don't know how they can actually stand there with a straight face, knowing that they have to know that they're either lying or frantically bullshitting and hoping to get away with it. Because the words they're using, they don't even know the meaning of the words they're using half the time. And the thing about science is it tests itself. If you come up with a hypothesis, it only takes one result that goes against it, and your hypothesis is blown.
Yeah, it's the ultimate no second chance.
Yeah. And so it always self-tests. The first thing that happens when a scientific paper is published, it's reviewed by peers, you know, who try and pick holes in it before it even gets published anywhere.
See, that's why I've made this mean-spirited argument that if the swine flu does become a problem, a big problem, a bigger problem than what it is, that we can really, really advance some positive social change just by denying the flu vaccine to anyone who doesn't believe in evolution and anyone who denies global warming or advances the idea of secession.
Well, yeah, that would sound fairly reasonable. I mean,
why would you want a vaccine that's based on evolutionary biology if you think that evolution is demonic? I mean, that's like just getting a little armload of little demons.
Of course it is. But you got to cover your bases here. Come on. These guys don't work like that. You know, yeah, I'll say I believe this if it gets me what I want, but if it doesn't get me what I want, I'll change what I say real fast. So, you know, if it suddenly became necessary to bow down to the great god of global warming, as they like to call it, They'd do it pretty fast if they thought some nasty flu was about to kill them, wouldn't they?
Oh, they'll be in the front of the line crying, you know, like the book says, Dave. They'll be in the front of the line crying, "Lord, Lord."
Yeah, but they won't do anything if that flu is going to kill you.
No, no, no. And see, the nice thing in the book, it says, "And they will cry, Lord, Lord, and I will hear them not." But the problem is, in our society, they'll cry, "Lord, Lord," and everybody will go, "Oh, look, they're exercising their First Amendment rights. Quick, get them a shot first."
Yeah. Make it 9mm. That shot.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, things like this pandemic, the idea of a pandemic, you know, terrorism, as many have noted on this program, doesn't scare me.
Well,
It's stuff over which one is powerless. It is stuff that is pervasive and stuff that has the ability to strike without warning and take away people that you love or take away you without regard to guilt or innocence.
I grew up with the IRA blowing people up all around me. I mean, my hometown has a memorial for two kids, Mother's Day. Day before Mother's Day, bombing the main street. And a nice touch was to set another one for 2 minutes later as people moved away from where the first one went off. This is you know, I was 10 minutes away from one once, which is way too close. So terrorism, when people talk about terrorism, they truly have to understand it. But people in America don't, because they've never lived through many years of bombs going off around them, where if you found someone had left a bag, you didn't go and look at it and see if you could find a wallet to see you to return it to. You called the bomb squad. That's how it was in the 70s in the UK. So when people talk about terrorism over here, I always just say to them, you have no idea what you're talking about. You really don't. So that's my take on the whole thing. And all you can do, the only way you can fight terrorism is just to say, well, if they get me, they get me, and I'm just going to carry on regardless. And that's what most people don't seem to get. And that's why the fear that's injected into the whole argument by government is so obviously a control mechanism. Because really the only way to fight it is, number one, best way to fight it is not go into other countries and screw them over and then not expect them to come over to yours and try and get their own back. That would be the first thing to prevent terrorism, I would
say. Yeah, I remember a long time ago when Paul McCartney wrote a song called "Give Ireland Back to the Irish."
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, we kind of did that, didn't we?
Well, no.
Well, no.
Ireland's very, very complex.
Well, sure it is, but you know, we've had a reduction in the terrorism you were referring to that has a lot to do with self-determination.
Mostly the terrorists, most of the terrorist issues have become hitmen for the drug industry in Ireland now. There's more murders now than there were during what we call the Troubles, and it's the same people doing it. They just moved on to different things.
Just doing it for a different reason.
Yeah. So there were evil sods who were doing it because that was a way of doing it, really, is what it comes down to. A lot of them. I mean, and, you know, I nearly threw up when I saw Tony Blair put his arm around, what's his name? My brain just left me. My train of thought just derailed. Jerry Adams.
Jerry Adams, Sinn Féin.
And I thought, yep, two murderers together. That was what I actually thought.
What an opportunity, and we're going to miss it. Yeah.
You know? And this is the thing. The people that seem to somehow rise to, and I'm using inverted commas here, the top, the people who get to the point where they have a big say over other people are the very last people we want doing that. Some very wise.
Because the nature of our political process precludes people of goodwill being those people you describe.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, honest to God, consider Minnesota, and consider the wonderful people that are there, those sturdy people of old Scandinavian stock and so forth that Garrison Keillor makes so much hay out of on Prairie Home Companion. And the best that they can send to Congress is Michelle Bachmann.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to give that idea any credence whatsoever. However, what I do is what I do think is that that Michelle Bachmann had more access to more money and more and said more that was pleasing to the people with the money in that district in Minnesota.
Yeah, would you just look at your new president? The thing that as I've always thought about the U.S. process of selecting the commander in chief is step one: sell your soul to the corporate monster. That's it. That's the first step in becoming president, is to sell your soul to the corporate monster, as I refer to corporations in general. And at that point, there's no hope. It doesn't matter after that. Corporations don't give money away unless they get something back for it.
Oh, and by the way, Dave, I'm going to run something for you real quick, because you will find this at least gratifying. Michelle Bachmann did not give birth to that insanity without someone standing up to her. That someone is Earl Blumenauer, a Democrat from Oregon. You know, God bless Oregon, you know. Because they sent somebody with a half a brain to Congress when a district in Minnesota sent someone with no portion of a brain to Congress. And at least he gives her the smackdown that she richly deserves. So check this out.
Contributes perhaps 3% of the 3%. In other words, human activity is maybe 3% contributing to the 3% of carbon dioxide that's in Earth's atmosphere. It's so negligible. It's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent. It can hardly be quantified.
My good friend, the gentle lady from Minnesota, doesn't think there are any problems with the concentration of...
He could have just stopped and said, my good friend, the gentle lady from Minnesota, doesn't think. Because
that's what I thought he was going to do.
Yeah, that whole diatribe of hers was based on not thinking, but believing. And you know, the sooner we get those two important little abstract verbs sorted out, the sooner off a lot of us will be, the sooner a lot of us will be a hell of a lot better off. But anyway, to continue.
Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. It's interesting to listen to her say that something that was naturally occurring simply couldn't be harmful, ignoring the fact that we have the highest concentrations of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere for 2/3 of a million years. The consensus of the scientific community, not people making things up on the floor of the House, is that this has been profoundly influenced by human activity, starting with the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, where we started consuming huge quantities of coal, burning fossil fuels, accelerating that over time. The consensus of the scientific community is that this is, in fact, a serious problem.
Good on him, you know.
Yeah. But, there's so little honesty in that place that there's no hope, really. You know, it's all about jockeying for position, and helping out your buddies, and this and that and the other. And as a very sad loss to the world of last year, George Carlin said, the politicians are irrelevant. They're only there to make you think you've got a choice. And that really nails it. Because they just stand there and contribute to global warming with the CO2 that comes out of their faces when they're talking so much crap. You know, leave that wrong.
Yeah, see, I'm enough of an ass that my response would have been, the gentle lady from Minnesota can do the world a favor by stopping talking and ceasing to emit so much CO2 into the atmosphere.
Yeah. Yep. You know.
I know. Dave, good to hear from you, brother.
Anyways, look after yourself, keep doing what you're doing, and we shall talk.
All right. anytime the bug bites.
Okay.
All right, later, Dave. Bye now.
Good night.
From Sheffield, England, by way of Ontario, Canada,
That is our Canadian sage, Brother Dave. And let's see if anybody's here. Nope. I don't know what that was. Okay. But nobody home, anyway, you slice it. Talking about terrorism reminded me of it. I got to tell you. I think I mentioned last week, I've been on a kick. And it's partially because the bug has bitten Ferg, too. We've been listening to it together. I've been on a kick listening to Paul Simon's Graceland album. Because the lyrics are just so damn good, and the music around it is just top-notch. But with that in mind, something Dave said about living with terrorism, and something that, and you know, the tenor of the whole program this evening just brought this to mind. I may have even played it, but just bear with me, okay? Just tolerate me. I don't ask for much. Let's take a little break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Thanks for indulging me. Maybe it doesn't do anything for you, but it, God, that lyric just
It touches on so many things that constitute our modern world. No, we're not going to start playing the record backwards and listening for secret messages or anything, but lasers in the jungle and... Yeah. I'll probably listen to it. I think it's become part of my obsessive-compulsive disorder, you know, the low-rent one that sort of haunts me. The earworms. John did it to me. John does it to me every Sunday night with Michael Frotti's Stay Human. And I have to, and I go through the day with that lyric, especially the line about all the freaky people make the beauty of the world, all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. And it just stays stuck with me. And that lyric has been stuck with me too. Just for the simple reason that it seems to encapsulate so much of modern life inside a music that is so not typically white European, I guess, is what I'm getting at. So that's that. There is other stuff. There is an abundance of other stuff. And 34 minutes to get into it, unless you want to bring up something of your own. I thought I would confirm to you in these last few minutes of the program via a couple of stories that the assertion we are putting forward here, you and I together, not me and that mouse in my pocket, but the collective energy that we bring together, the thought, whatever you want to call it, the understanding, the comprehension, there we go, how about something a little bit more concrete, although not much, of how dangerous this world is and what a danger. Look, you name me a problem that exists on this planet, great or small, and then tell me who poses the greater problem arising out of the problem. Liberals or conservatives? That easy. We knew, for instance, that the teabagging that took place a couple of weeks ago had trouble buried in it. I've told you tonight that because of the flu outbreak that supposedly started in Mexico, some filthy right-winger out there, more likely than not the savage wiener, will begin screaming his fool head off and trying to incite some level of violence against that ancient abused people that we deem to be south of the Rio Grande River. And like I said, we knew the teabaggers were going to be trouble. We knew from the Malbama t-shirts. We knew from the, all the various nasty anti-Barack Obama propaganda that was in force there. We knew that there would be trouble. I offer you this. Twitter postings. 8.05 p.m., April 11th. You ignorant slaves! You want to live forever? Conan. 8.06 p.m., April 11th. After I am killed on the Capitol steps like a real man, the rest of you will remember me! 8.07 p.m., April 11th. I await the police! 8.17 p.m., this is journalism, so I'm going to use the words. 8.17 p.m., April 11th. I really don't give a shit anymore. Send the cops around. I'll cut their heads off the heads and throw on the state capitol steps. 8.17 p.m., April 11th.
Of course they'll kill me, but life is no longer worth living. Not in Oklahoma!
Now, this is a wingnut who thinks that the world's going to hell in a socialist handbasket in Oklahoma. No, really, Oklahoma. Socialist Oklahoma. These are all from April 11th regarding the April 15th teabag parties. Well, he got caught. Chalk up one for our side. We got one before he got us. The Twitter user was Citizen Quasar. Starting April 11th with those tweets that I just shared with you. After I'm killed on the Capitol steps like a real man, the rest of you will remember me. Citizen Quasar is Daniel Knight Hayden, 52 years old, taken down by the FBI after announcing that he wanted to start a war, his word, not mine, a war against We the People beginning on the steps of the Oklahoma City Capitol building. 8:01 p.m. Start the killing now. I am willing to be the first death. After I am killed on the Capitol steps like a real man, the rest of you will remember me. As usual, Daniel Knight Hayden, freak, has a MySpace page. His MySpace page has all kinds of stuff about the New World Order, gun control as Nazi fascism. And here's a new one. God almighty, this could be straight out of a Donald Fagen lyric. Barack Obama's covert use of television hypnosis. Thanks for calling. I wait all night for calls like these. God, where are those calls when you... Oh, come on, you guys got to admit it. You'd love to hear a right-winger call and tell us all about Barack Obama's use of covert television hypnosis. I don't know if that means he's hypnotizing televisions or if the television is delivering hypnosis. I don't watch the little box very much, so it doesn't seem to be working. Or else they're not programming it into No Reservations with Tony Bourdain, but it's in repeats right now, so yeah, I guess not. Then there's poor old Earl Schaefer, another right-winger. Daniel Knight Hayden, 52 years old, wingnut, insane, crazy. No, they're not insane. Stop that, Bob. Stop that. No, he's as sane as you and me. He is militarized. He is militantized. He is radicalized. But he looked up the, Earl Schaefer and was convinced that Earl Schaefer was the organizer of the Oklahoma City teabagging. Earl Schaefer said, he seemed to know a lot of stuff about me, but I don't know how or why. He called me a few days before that tea party and let me know somehow he got my name as one of the organizers. I don't have the energy. Even so... even though Schaefer told Hayden that he wasn't the teabagger organizer, Hayden kept on tweeting. In one, he posted his phone number. 12:49 a.m., 49 minutes past midnight on April 15th, Daniel Knight Hayden posts the following to Twitter. Locked and loaded for the Oklahoma State Capitol. Let's see what happens. And that's the day the FBI arrested Daniel Knight Hayden. Now, Earl Schaefer was not an organizer of the teabagging, but he figured he'd go. So he was headed for the Oklahoma Capitol building in Oklahoma City when he saw what he figured, you know, they're not exactly surreptitious. And being a paranoid right-winger in the first place, he was keeping his eyes peeled. He saw what he figured were FBI agents watching him. And
Well, you know the mentality. Stops his car and walks up to him. Says, you fellers agents? He says, they said, yeah. You know Daniel Knight Hayden? No. Well, they went on to tell him that he could be arrested if he went to the demonstration. And like a true cowardly right-winger. You know all that give me liberty or give me death stuff? Nah. Just a quiet word from the FBI, and he blew up, he just dried up and blew away. But here's the fun part. They asked Earl Schaefer how he heard about the teabagging. I told him I heard about it through that talk show host, Glenn Beck. Daniel Hayden, meanwhile, has been arraigned and released to a halfway house. In other words, essentially put on the streets with all that rage still in him, including Obama's television hypnosis. Yeah, really. That was one that ended well. On the other hand, Cossack sent me one today that didn't. Story by Andrew Gant of Florida Freedom Newspapers. Headline, Sheriff, none of it makes sense. It doesn't make sense if you don't understand the twisted, sick, and violent nature of conservatives in America. The lead of the story, paragraph one. This just happened, by the way. The events that led to the shooting deaths of two Okaloosa County Sheriff's deputies Saturday began in a small top-floor apartment in Fort Walton Beach with an argument over a tube of Clearasil. On Sunday, lawmen still were investigating why Joshua Cartwright... Why? Oh, dear. Investigating why. Investigating why Joshua Cartwright, a 28-year-old U.S. Army Reserve soldier with a history of violence, killed Okaloosa County Sheriff's deputies Bert Lopez and Warren Skip York at a gun range in Crestview. A few minutes after he killed the deputies, Cartwright was killed in a shootout with lawmen in Dufuniac Springs. Interim Sheriff Ed Spooner said on Sunday, none of it's logical. None of it makes sense. He'd obviously just got something else in his mind. Wrong, Sheriff. Dead wrong. It all makes sense. Every time a radicalized, militarized, homicidalized right-winger gets a firearm in his hand and decides to do a little business, it all makes sense. Sheriff, turn on your radio. Sheriff Spooner, dial over and listen to Sean Hannity for a little bit. Sheriff Spooner, give a few minutes to Michael the Savage Wiener. Turn on your damn TV, Sheriff Spooner, and watch a little bit of Glenn Beck. Then you won't say something as drop-dead ignorant as, none of it's logical, none of it makes sense. He obviously just got something else in his mind. What he got in his mind, Sheriff, was the right wing. The same thing that got in Daniel Knight Hayden's mind. The same thing that got in Adkisson's mind. The same thing that got in the mind of the shooter in Arkansas. The same thing that got in the mind of the white supremacists who want to murder Obama. And it's all intentional. And it's all deliberate. And Joshua Cartwright is just the man that Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Michael Savage and Neil Bortz And all those filthy, vile, vulgar right-wingers led by their maximum supreme neo-maxi-zoom-dweeby leader Flush Flimball himself are looking for. How do I know that? I know that because of the next paragraph. So we are one, two, three, four, five paragraphs in before we get to the nut. An offense report filed against Cartwright the day he died outlines an angry husband who threatened his wife, kept guns and knives on hand, was, quote, severely disturbed that Barack Obama had been elected president and believed the U.S. government was conspiring against him. Believed? That might be the right use of the word from an objective journalism standpoint. However, in his mind, he knew. How did he know? Glenn Beck told him repeatedly, day in and day out, and wept on the air and said, look in my eyes. And Hannity told him and said, I want to see him tortured. I want to do it myself. I want to drown him. You see this football? That's what I want to do with his head. Slam it into the desk. Apparently someone had tried to intervene with Joshua Cartwright. Man, I miss when the Cartwrights were good people. Hoss and Adam and Little Joe. And Ben. But no, Joshua Cartwright was a right-wing murderer. He had a 21-year-old wife. Her name's Elizabeth. Apparently, he had a history of domestic violence with her, and she did not have the common good sense that God gave a splattered goose to leave. No, 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 no. They live in fundamentalist Florida, where divorce is not an option. The court ordered, after the first round of domestic violence, you see, the court ordered anger management for Cartwright after a domestic battery, like I said. It happened late in 2008. Now, I'm not sure about the meaning of this sentence, and it's a journalism issue, not a philosophical one. On Friday, Elizabeth told lawmen Cartwright was laid off from his job at a telephone store. I'm assuming that because this is a... Okay, so apparently Friday, Joshua Cartwright got ditched from his job at a cell phone store. Weighing in at about 220 pounds, he also had worked as a bouncer at a bar. So Friday, he gets laid off from his job at the cell phone store. He gets up Saturday morning, 9:30. Well, actually, he was up earlier than that. He woke Elizabeth up at 9:30 in the apartment. Honey, get up. Damn it, honey, get up. I can't find my clearer seal. No kidding. I can't find my clear seal. And in his convinced, certain right-wing mind, he decided it was in her purse. I seen you put it in your purse. You put it in your purse when we went out dancing the other night before I got fired. You know, you remember you wanted to go out there to that karaoke night, and I said I'd go. You said you'd carry my clear seal for me in your purse so people wouldn't have to see it, so I wouldn't have to have it in my pocket. Yeah, it's in your purse. I know it's in your purse. I know it's... Woman, don't backtalk me. It is in your purse. So he throws the covers off of her, picks her up off the bed, throws her back down on the bed, pulls her hair, and she responded by telling him that the behavior was not acceptable. So then she tried to call for help, and he took two phones away from her. Now, being good good right wingers, the Mr. Cartwright always kept his Second Amendment penis extension right by the bed. She picked up one of the pistols near the bed, and he took it away from her. So then he throws her back on the bed and hits her in the face. Then he stops when he sees somebody looking in their windows. He still wouldn't let her out of the bedroom. A deputy investigating the case said, Elizabeth told me her husband gets very controlling and authoritarian when he's angry. Dadgum. No, he doesn't get authoritarian when he's angry. He is authoritarian all the time because his mind has been poisoned by authoritarian right-wing ideology. So she finally gets out of the bedroom. She gets out of the bedroom and goes and gets another gun, a 9mm Taurus that she had in her purse, I don't know, maybe next to the Clearasil. And then Cartwright takes that gun away from her and punches her and throws her onto the floor. So then she gets away, finally, goes to Fort Walton Beach Medical Center and calls 911, which precipitates the deputies into heading out to serve a domestic violence arrest warrant on Joshua Cartwright. It's Saturday. It's just another Saturday in Fort Walton Beach. It's where all the kids went on went for their graduation trip from my hometown. Everybody went, we're going down to Fort Walton. But it's Saturday in Fort Walton, so, you know, they're in that little slice of paradise. Naturally, what you want to do is go to the gun range. So the deputies find out that he's gone to the Shoal River Gun Club in Crestview, Florida. And the deputies, doing their duty, drove right over to the Shoal River Gun Club where Joshua Cartwright was in the parking lot. They walked up to him. He was a prick. They tasered him. And he went down to the ground. Remember, he's 220 pounds. They taser him, and he gets back up and gets up firing with the gun that he had concealed. Sheriff Spooner said, to show you how aggressive he was shooting at York. After he shot him, he didn't even turn around. He just started firing over his head. And like a true right-winger, maybe one who has listened to G. Gordon Liddy in the past, reminding wing nuts with guns to always fire for the head, the news report notes that both deputies suffered multiple wounds in areas not covered by their bulletproof vests. Cartwright's little saga came to an end a few minutes later. And when he started shooting at other lawmen, patrol cars rammed his truck, flipped it on its roof near the intersection of U.S. 331 and U.S. 90 into Funiac Springs. Might be the Funic Springs. You know, you never know about pronunciations. Floor manager at the Sprint store wouldn't comment on his past employment there. Mother. Right wingers. Right wingers. The murder that walks the land. Right wingers. And finally, a little bit of inspiration. Inspiration coming from the second-in-command of the Maersk Alabama. Shane Murphy, number two on the Maersk Alabama, came home Thursday. And he had some words for Flush Flimball. Because Flush Flimball had claimed that in his sarcastic, venomous, poisonous diatribe, if only President Obama had known that the three Somali community organizers are actually young black Muslim teenagers, I'm sure he wouldn't have given the order to shoot. Really? He said that. That's what $40 million a year will get you. Making light of the fact that Barack Obama had tried to do real good in his community by being a community organizer. Making light of all the good work that is done by community organizers all over this country who teach people to stand up for themselves. Making light of the work of, for instance, Maria Gano, who is a community organizer with the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. For the work that she has done in helping people to stand up and say no to the further destruction of their communities. Making light of all of that, calling the Somali pirates black teenagers on the high seas. If only President Obama had known the three Somali community organizers are actually young black Muslim teenagers, I'm sure he wouldn't have given the order to shoot. Thereby working in, you know, several racially overtoned buzzwords. Black Muslim, Muslim teenagers. And for his right wing base hauling it, you know that Barack Obama, you know he's a secret Muslim, don't you? That's why his middle name's Hussein. So Shane Murphy came home, and before he got home, he had already heard about what Flush Flimball said. He said, it feels great to be home. With the exception of Rush Limbaugh, who is trying to make this into a race issue, that's disgusting. The president did the right thing. It's a war. It's about good versus evil. And what you, meaning Limbaugh, and what you said is evil. That is hate speech, and I won't tolerate it. Hey, Flimball, you big gelatinous tub of guts. Take your Oxycontin-addled brain over and say that. Say that crap to Shane Murphy's face. And when you do, be prepared to have your gelatinous, drug-addled ass handed to you. Of course, Flush Flimball won't do that any more than Sean Hannity will agree to be waterboarded, even if it's for the troops. Hey, troops! Any of you care to ask Sean Hannity why he's chickening out? He's not going to do anything one one-thousandth as dangerous as what you do every day. And he says he respects the troops. What he is a coward. Plain old-fashioned coward. And before we close out tonight, some kudos. One of the men who walked side by side and locked arms with Martin Luther King Jr. was John Lewis, a young man at the time, who is now a member of Congress from the state of Georgia, from Atlanta. And he is a good man and a great man. John Lewis, in the company of Lynn Woolsey from California, Donna Edwards from Maryland, and Representative Keith Ellison from Minnesota, proof that Minnesotans care.
can elect decent representation, for anyone who was concerned about that, by Michelle Bachmann. Those four, Ellison, Edwards, Lewis, and Woolsey, were handcuffed and taken away from the Sudanese embassy today when they crossed a police line. They crossed the police line in protest of the Sudanese government's expulsion of aid groups from Darfur, certainly damning more and more to a miserable death. Willing to put his hide where his principles are, Keith Ellison said, and I quote, "It is wrong to deny aid to the most vulnerable people on our planet." Regardless of what else they do in the House, on this day, I'm proud of Keith Ellison and Donna Edwards and Lynn Woolsey and John Lewis, who at his age is still walking the walk and talking the talk for the most basic social justice. Congratulations. So that's the show for tonight. It would be sincerely nice if we could get a little closer to our fundraising goal for the month, but I understand if you can't. Thank you for joining in tonight, however you did, email, telephone calls, chat room. Thank you for listening in delay via the podcast. Thank you to everybody who does keep this going. All of you. Thank you to our IT professional, Peter Godbold. Thank you to John Fox, our chief engineer, and so much more. Thank you to the hardest working, most overworked man in liberal talk. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to Horn intern junior grade Ferg, here and doing his job and learning how not to talk during a program.
You're welcome, and I'm doing my best.
You're well, yeah, thank you. And thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The hardest working, bravest people I know. Fighting upstream because they know how important the fight is, and they know that we are all downstream and downwind, and they never give up. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Yeah. On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week of Conversation Radio here on the Horn. Wonderful show getting us started last night with all Foxed Up, John Fox, in fabulous downtown Woy Woy. I got to thinking about it. John's not the end of the week. John's the beginning of the week. So thanks for getting us started, John. 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday night. All Foxed Up. Yeah, it's almost 2 minutes past the hour as we get started for this Monday program. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. I've got an idea of what the primary topic is this evening, and there are several others along the way as well. But I'm always interested to know what it is that's on your mind. On my mind, Mexico. As I began following the news of the flu outbreak and noting that it was said to have begun in Mexico, I was reminded of the single most prophetic statement about that country, the words of Porfirio Diaz. Pobre México, tan lejos de Dios y tan cerca de los Estados Unidos. Poor Mexico. So far from God, and so close to the United States. The timing of this could not be worse. This flu outbreak